I'm Anna Garcia, host of True Crime News, the podcast. Every week, we bring you in-depth coverage on cases making headlines, as well as those that go under the radar. Tune in for murders that defy explanation, mystery seeking exploration, and shocking secrets that will leave you breathless. Each week, we honor the victims by going beyond the salacious in our search for justice. Crime never stops. And neither do we. Listen to True Crime News, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
As we welcome in four-time All-Star, three-time World Series champion, one of the greatest pitchers to ever wear the Mets uniform, Doc Gooden joins us right now on WFAN. Doc, thanks so much for your time.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for having me. I got my grandkids up for the holidays, for the summer. So we've been having a great time. We enjoyed the 4th. It was a great holiday. And so I'm just enjoying the summer with the kids and the grandkids. So just loving it.
And supporting women's softball, you're throwing out the first pitch. What's like the key? Because I'm in a pitching competition next week.
Yeah.
If I have to throw a strike off a mound, what do I need to do?
You know, the key is, I tell this to kids, even professional baseball players, The key is the breathing technique. It sounds cheesy, but always take a deep breath before you throw the ball, even hitting. Take a deep breath that releases everything, that releases the stress out of your muscles and relaxes you.
Okay.
Because if you tighten up thing, I got to throw a strike, or I got to hit the ball, you're going to tighten up and you're going to choke. So just relax, deep breath, and let it go. You've done it before, so you can do it again, I'm sure.
All right. Okay, I'll take that. When it's a live stream thing, so when I take a breath, I'm going to think of you. Everybody's going to think of you.
Okay.
Yeah. So I love that you're supporting, by the way, women's softball on Long Island, on Hofstra now. So why is it important for you to support first, women's leagues, women's sports?
I think it's great. They deserve an opportunity because it's tough for the women. Normally with softball, once they get done with college, if they don't make it to the Olympics, their softball career is basically over. They can play in the rec league or, the men, women league or whatever, but just give them opportunity. We're trying to get the professional league, get MLB to back them up and play behind it. And it's a great game. If anybody in the area, come check them out. Very professional. They take it very serious. Good coaches, good atmosphere, good food. It's a great, great atmosphere. And I'm just happy to be a part. The New York Rise throwing out the first pitch and looking forward to it.
That's awesome. All right. So we connected initially this morning over this big event coming up on the Mets calendar. Doc, can you believe it's been 40 years since 1986?
Oh, man, this is tough. And I tell you, I'm getting old. But, but it's great. It's great. I'm looking forward to it. August 1st to be out to the ballpark with my teammates, the fans, the coaches, even the staff, the clubhouse kids who are behind the scene, the media who played a part. It's going to be a great day for them all just to relive those moments and share that with my teammates and everyone. I'm definitely looking forward to it and counting down the days.
Could you give us a little insight of what the Mets have planned for that day?
Only thing I know, they're going to have a ceremony at the stadium. I'm sure it's going to be very emotional because, unfortunately, we lost a lot of great coaches and lost, a couple of players with Gary Carter mentioned. So for me, it's going to be very emotional because Mel Sarmeyer and David Johnson are good friends of mine, as well as Bill Robinson. And on. So, but at the same time, it's going to be great to share those moments with my teammates, the fans who brought the excitement and energy to Shea Stadium in 86, and even the media. I'd be happy to see those guys too, because we all played a part. And just to share those moments and reminisce a little bit about what it was like. And like you mentioned earlier, we were talking about this year's team haven't been great, still a ways to go, but this should bring some excitement and get them going as well. I would hope so.
Yeah, I always ask of you guys that always go back and to be celebrated or whatever. But I know there's not a lot of intertwining between you guys and the current team. But if you get a chance, who are you hoping to talk to on that day?
I might be a little biased. I like talking to the pitchers, and I love that. And honestly, I like to be more involved somehow. I don't know how I can do that. But just sharing my wisdom, ups and downs, whatever I can share with those team, because they have talent, but and the analytics is great, but I think having some veteran guys come in there, guys who've been there before, who the guys that experienced the ups and downs in New York, dealt with the media, dealt with the fans, dealt with the expectations, just talk to the guys or let them feed off you, ask you questions or whatever. I think it's a win-win for everybody. And with the analytics, bring that in, Bob. I think they both will go hand in hand. But Kristen Scott is my guy. I've known him for a little bit, a couple years now. And I look forward to seeing him, and I always like chopping up with him a little bit. And even new guys who I haven't met, like McClain, I haven't met. I know Clay Helms a little bit. I've talked to him and shared some moments with him. I look forward to talking to all those guys and getting to know him a little bit.
Well, we got
to
get you out there. I know the Yankees have, as you were talking, the Yankees have Andy Pettitte come back often to be that kind of mentor-type figure. We got to get you out there more often to the ballpark. I think they have a lot to learn from you.
I'd love to do that. I go to some games. I like to be down there just to talk to the guys. Just to, obviously I'm a diehard Met fan. I still watch all the games. I love the young guys they got, AJ Ewing and Carson Benz. I love watching those guys play. Makes me want to be a veteran. So I'm still watching all the games. Still pulling for them. I'm one of those fans that still got the fingers crossed. Still got hope. The season's not over till it's over. Anything can happen. They just got to keep going. And the main thing, you like to see them finish, finish strong as they possibly can. And understand that when you go out there, you got to play with pride, hold each other accountable, and there's still a lot of season to go.
You know, I wanted to ask you about Nolan McLean, also a homegrown starter, much like you. What do you see when you watch him? I know you watch the games. What do you see when you watch him that makes you think or not that he can be the real deal?
Oh, he definitely can be the real deal. I think his mouth presence, I think the sample that he gave last year, he set the bar pretty high last year, even though it was a smaller sample. So this year, he coming in, everybody started expecting great things. But he's still a young guy, still has a ways to go. He's only, I don't know if he has 30 starts on his belt yet, but he's going to be fine. Once he finds his rhythm and learn about himself and what it takes to be a major league player and be consistent in the days that he don't have his great stuff, knowing that he still have good enough stuff to get hitters out and keep the team in the game, he's going to be just fine.
One of the greatest Mets of all time, Doc Gooden, joins us on the Fan. Hey, Doc, what's it like? I know at different junctures you guys do get together, but what's it like to be back together with, all of your teammates for the most part, 4 decades later? Like, is it still the same as it was?
Oh, it is. It is. We're just a little older now. And the things we used to do back then, we can't do now, unfortunately. But the thing is, when we get together, like a lot of us go down to the Mets Fantasy Camp every November down in Port St. Lucie. A lot of us get together. But when we get together, it's like we never left. We just pick up right where we left off and we still reminisce. And but now instead of talking about hanging out all night, we talk about how's your family, how's your kids, how's your grandkids? And in some cases, like my case, how's your great grandkids? But it was a great conversation, making sure everybody's healthy, everybody's doing well because we are getting older. And it's just fun to see those guys, and I can't wait. I'm getting excited now just talking about it.
All these stories, and even when I talk about high school, all the stories, the hits get bigger, the strikeouts are bigger.
Oh,
Like,
yes.
who's a guy that you can count on that's going to tell the same story every single time, just a little bit bigger?
I think it's always Keith Hernandez. Keith is a great guy, but he always, certain balls he hit, now they go a little further. But Keith was my guy. Keith was like my assistant pitching coach to have him on the field. And he's a guy I love talking to. He loves talking hitting. And I just love talking with Keith. He's a great guy. And when you talk to Keith, it's like he's back on the field. He gets his game face on and he's ready to talk baseball. But like you say, he's one of those guys where the one ball that went 396, I'm sure August 1st, it went 410 or something. Just one of those guys. Yes. But it's all fun.
Of course it is. And no, I was curious about this too, because obviously Shea Stadium is no longer, it's at Citi Field. Is it as meaningful doing it at a different park, even though it's the same?
It's a little different, but it's still the same because you have some fans that was there in '86 that will be there, and the players were there. Shea, that was our Shea, and I think it was time. And I love Citi Field; they did a great job with Citi Field. And even though we can't have our ballpark, it's still that was in the parking lot right next door. And you're still gonna get that same vibe. For that day, August 1st, Citi Field will be Shea Stadium.
What do you miss most about Shea?
I think the most I miss is honestly is the plane rides. The planes coming over back and forth when you're pitching. You got a guy right where you want him. You better put him away, and all of a sudden a plane flies over and he calls timeout and steps out. That breaks up the momentum. And, I mean, it's one of the things that I miss, but it's one of my biggest pet peeves as well.
I know you got a 747 going overhead.
Oh,
It's
it's coming. As soon as you
loud.
got the guy stuff, it's two strikes, one ball. You're ready to drop the curveball on him. I blow him away. The plane comes flying over, and I'm probably calling timeout. Gets to hit another chance to kind of regroup. So that's one thing I should say I don't miss, but that's one of the things that was part of the game.
Yeah, and it's part of Citi Field. It's still even part of Citi Field too, those planes.
Yeah. So it feels nice. So they did a great job with that. It's
They
not really
did.
a bad seat in the house. So I just want the team to start playing better so these fans can get what they deserve.
Yeah, I know. And the best part about Citi Field, I think, is the outfield, how it's like so open. It's like that whole
Yes.
open promenade. I love that.
Oh, it's great. They did a great job. I like all the entertainment with the dance on the dugout, the music in between, the walk-up song, the whole vibe. I guess it's a new generation thing. I just love it. And so I look forward to going to the park all the time. And just like 24, I was reliving 24, even though it happened a little soon, unexpected. But once you get that feel, you want it again. You want to feel it again. And the players that was there in 24, I'm sure they got to feel that and know what it's like. If they get to that point, they know the energy is going to be there, and these fans are going to support them. And I'll tell you what, the way the team has started off, the fans have still been there and been very supportive. It's one good thing to see.
Yeah, I agree with you. And we're talking about 1985 Cy Young Award winner Doc Gooden on The Fan. Doc, I know your team, so many documentaries, so many books written about it. What is something that you wish people knew about the team that they might not know?
One thing that egged me all the time, and us as players, we talk about all the time, like, they talk about the team being a party team, could have won more championships, and all that stuff is true. We did party a little too much, but the one thing, we had chemistry, and we had a lot of knowledge, a lot of baseball knowledge that don't be talked about enough. We would sit on, like, Sunday day games when the traffic at Shea, you know, after a game, we'll sit in the clubhouse, drink beer, and just talk baseball for hours after the game till the traffic got down, plane rides, bus rides to the hotel on the road. Talking baseball, we love the game, and that's one thing that don't get talked about enough is the knowledge that we had on our team.
A lot of the team of the Mets team has been, the partying, and a lot of it's
Yes.
written about. So the age of social media, do you think it would have been the same?
I think I'm being a little different now because actually I'm glad they didn't have the social media back then. A lot of us would probably be still locked up, to be honest with you. But I think it would have had some impact, but not as much, you know. Addiction is a tough thing, and my problem started in Tampa, and most of my problems was in Tampa. So when I would go home and hang around my friends and hang around the same people and doing the same things, I was getting the same results. So I think I probably had my problems either way. But I think with the social media now and the way everything is with that, I think it helps the younger generation a little bit. But I just wish that I could see the players. I know time has changed now, but even towards the end of my career, guys wasn't hanging out as much as they was back then in the 80s and 90s. I like to see that more. That's where you build chemistry. Get to knowing guys away from the ballpark. Understanding what their family like, what kicks them, what gets them going, what do you like, what's a good day for you? That's how you get to build chemistry and you bring the team together. So I like to see more of that, me personally.
I've read about maybe there was differences in your clubhouse, but you guys put them aside and you focused on the common goal. Like, what did you guys do? Maybe it was hanging out outside of the clubhouse, but what did you guys do to make sure everybody, besides their differences, was working towards that common goal?
The key was it starts from the top. Like we have Frank Cash, the general manager, great guy. Then it falls down to David Johnson, the coaches. But we had great leaders. We had Keith Hernandez, Ray Knight, Kevin Mitchell, guys like that. Even though Kevin Mitchell's a rookie, but guys that held each other accountable. And we had a problem. We kept it in house, kept away from the media. And like they talk about, like you hear all the rumors about Soto and Lindor. I mean, not everybody's gonna get along, but you have to respect each other. And when you come, you put that uniform on, you have family. You're more than family. You're there for one common goal. And I think guys got to understand that. And if you don't have players to bring that together and hold each other accountable, we got to have somebody on the coaching staff or management to do that. But without leadership, you have nothing, and it's not going to work. So you got to have somebody that can command leadership and hold each other accountable. If it's bring these guys in the room, whatever you got to do to make sure when we're at the ballpark, there's one common goal, and we're all going to get along, and we're going to play together, and we're going to win together.
And we have the same name going across our
The
chest.
same name. Everybody dance to that one drummer beat, and that's it. There's no one guy bigger than another guy. We're all the same.
How does that then, that even just that concept right there, one guy bigger than another guy, how does that affect the team dynamic inside the clubhouse then?
If you have that problem, it's definitely going to affect because you're going to have some players taking sides to this guy, some players with this guy, and it's going to mess everything up. And you cannot have that. If you have guys in the locker room that's not getting along, somehow you have to, like I said, it starts with management. Got to bring it together. And if you don't have the management, you got to have some veteran players that's been around that can bring that together. And it goes back to what I was talking about, spending time away from the field. You got to, whether it's going to a pool hall, whether it's going to movies, I know it may sound cheesy, but you got to spend time away from the ballpark and get to know each other, understand what makes this guy click and what pisses this guy off. And that's how you build chemistry and get to know each other. You can't force friendship on nobody, but at the ballpark, you can force respect. You got to have respect for each other when you're at that ballpark.
Doc Gooden, member of the New York Mets Hall of Fame, is with us on The Fan. Hey, Doc, when you think about the '86 Mets, that season, the course of the season, at what point did you know, like in your heart of hearts, that that team was going to win the World Series?
I would go back even further to 85. When we won 98 games in 85 and got sent home because back then it was only two divisions. And I remember the last home game we had, we're waving our caps to the fans and we're throwing our caps in. I think from man to man, we knew that next year was going to be our year. And when we got the spring training in 86, normally Frank Cashin talks, then David Johnson talks, he introduces the coaches. David Johnson only said, "Hey guys, Let's go out there. We're gonna not only win, we're gonna dominate. And everybody from man to man took that to heart. And we went out there, they say it was cocky or whatever, but I think it was just confidence. And a lot of credit goes to guys like Danny Heat, Kevin Mitchell, Tim Tufel, Wally Blackman, guys who could have been starters on other teams. Everybody put the egos aside for one common goal, and that was to win that World Series. And that's all we wanted to do. And I think we won our division. We had it wrapped up by 20 games with a month to go, I believe. But we were just prepared for the postseason, and nothing was going to get in our way. I mean, we didn't fraternize with other teams. We didn't like other teams. It was just us, our fans, against everybody else. And that's the way we loved it.
Yeah, and that.
Every week on the Moth Podcast, you'll hear true stories that will intrigue you, inspire you, and make you laugh.
He said, "Is there anything in your diet that might be spiking your blood sugar?" I said, "Sometimes I eat pizza until I'm unconscious." He said, "I think that might be it."
For real stories live on stage from comedians, astronauts, accountants, farmers, and people just like you, follow and listen to The Moth wherever you get your podcasts.
That's, I think, what endeared you guys most to the fans, that whole attitude, that whole, you know.
The fans were great. And that's what the energy and excitement they brought to the stadium with the curtain calls and all that.
Yeah.
As players, that's what we fed off of. And it was just a great time.
You know, I know, no, I mean, as good as you guys were, like, no season goes 162 games plus smoothly 100%. So in that season, maybe in 85 or 86, what was the most difficult thing that you had to overcome?
I think for me, 86 was, I had to get over. That's a great question, because I allowed what I did in 85 to take away the fun for 86. And what I mean by that, I remember one game in 86, I pitched against Fernando Valenzuela, who was on top of his game that year. I beat him 3-0, complete game shutout, but I only had three strikeouts. And the first question was, what happened? You only had three strikeouts. And I said, the public correct answer was, oh, I'm not worried about strikeouts, I just want to win. But I took that home with me, thinking about, man, I only had three strikeouts. And I would try to match 85 for like the next five or six starts every time I took the field. So 86 at a time wasn't fun for me because I'm trying to match 85, but I set the bar so high in 85 that I couldn't come close to that. So something clicked. I think a conversation with Mel Stoudemire brought me back down and said, look, man, that was 85. You're still having a good year. We need you. You're still the ace of the staff. Get back to where you belong. And that conversation got me over the hump because I allowed that one conversation to say about the strikeouts, take the fun away from the game. So that was my turning point right there.
And just the reconfidence, the recalibration from Stoudemire to you, like, hey, dude, we still know you're the guy. Like, just go out there and do it.
That was the best thing I could have heard, because in my mind, I'm thinking, wow, I got to go out here. I got to get 10 strikeouts. I got to pitch a complete game. I got to kick you up in the runs. But technically, all I got to do is just win the game, keep our team in the game. That's all people expected. But I let the expectations from the media and myself get up so high where the game, I could win 3-2, and I wasn't happy because I only had five strikeouts. And that wasn't fair to me or the team or the fans. So I just had to get the experience and the maturity to understand that, you know, those are professionals that I'm pitching against also. And you got to get back to, you know, just enjoying the game and having the team win, because sometimes you get caught up in it, especially in New York. It's a tough thing to overcome at times.
You can't escape it. It's on the front pages. It's on the radio.
Oh, it's everywhere.
It's on the TV. It's everywhere.
Yes. It's everywhere. You know, Doc Gooden wins 3-0, but only three strikeouts, you know. So, but it was fun. I mean, honestly, I missed that with the media, because they brought out the best of me. Because, you know, if you didn't show up, that didn't have your best stuff, they're going to let you know. And a lot of guys I try to tell that come to New York or new to New York, players I play with are guys that now, I say, if something's written bad about you, or the fans are getting on you, they're not getting on you as a person, they're getting on your performance. And as an entertainer, you know whether your performance was good or not. So don't take it to heart. Just as long as you're playing hard and giving you all you got, the fans are immediately going to respect you, and that's what you're here to do.
Yeah, that's fantastic advice.
Yeah.
Your former teammate, Wally Backman, you mentioned him before, he has thrown his hat into the ring, so to speak, to be the next Mets manager. Open-ended on purpose, Doc. What do you think?
You know, I'm glad you brought that up. Now, this is just me.
Yeah.
People might take this the wrong way, but again, it's just as me as a baseball fan, former player, former teammate of Wally. I believe in Wally. What I would have done, once I heard that Andy Green is going back to the front office after the season's over, I would have let Wally manage the rest of this year. You got nothing to lose. Nothing to lose. Only gain. If Wally steps in there, which I believe would have did a great job, and Wally would have held those guys accountable, knowing Wally, see what he could do with this team. If he turns this team around, get him playing hard, give him a shot next year. If everything falls in his face where they labeled Wally, then okay. It didn't work. But this will be the time to bring Wally in right now, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, they have nothing to lose. So, like, why not try out the next potential guy?
Yeah, he would be the guy because one other thing, and I'm not knocking nobody or getting nobody, but yeah. I remember when Wally was the AAA manager for the Mets. They had only top prospects going through Wally to work with Wally. And everybody that you talk to, they love Wally. So everything's politics. Why not get this guy a shot at the big league level? Everything's politics. Everything's labeled about whatever happened in his past, whatever. But if the guy can do the job and he's doing well now, that's the only thing I rip off. If he's going to represent my organization the right way, going to get the best out of my players, that's the guy I want.
You said the word. A lot of times the buzzword accountability goes around a lot. What does accountability look like in a clubhouse?
Well, it's where everybody's held up to a certain level. When you put that Met uniform on, that New York on it, like you said, we're dancing to one drum beat. You got to understand what it means to be a big league player in a wear a Met uniform. And you should feel privileged. The way I look at it, you should be privileged to be a big league ball player and play in New York because so many guys are fighting to get to that position. So many guys in minor leagues won't be in this. But you're there. Yes, you earn the right. But to earn the right to stay, and the fans are paying so much money to play, I mean, to watch you play with all the deals, you owe the fans, you owe yourself, your family, to go out there and play hard, give your best, you owe your teammates, the owner of the team, or the entire organization. To me, that's accountability, showing up every single day and giving my best, even when I don't want to, no matter if I'm getting along with a teammate or not, if I feel good or not, if I'm having problems at home or whatever. When I come to that ballpark, my only goal is to play as hard as I possibly can, give you the best version of myself that I possibly can that particular day. To me, that's being accountable.
Kind of like an awkward transition here, but I did want to ask you about Pete Alonso. He's a homegrown guy, now an Oriole. Your thoughts on the situation, and he'll be back on September 14th with the Orioles. What kind of reception should he receive?
I think the fans will give him a great reception, and I think he deserves that. I think he's earned that. And the reason I say he earned that, Pete played every day. Yes. You know, he showed up every day. They say his defense is this. You can say whatever you want about Pete. He showed up every day. He handled the media well. He always in front of his locker, and I respect that. And plus, I might be a little biased. We both are from Tampa. I knew Pete when he was a kid.
Really?
And it still seemed like a dream that he's not wearing that Met uniform. Even though I have two kids that live in Maryland, so I see Pete down there playing a little bit, but it just don't seem the same in the Oriole uniform. Is there any way we can trade for Pete to get him back? Just say, hey, we made a mistake. Let's bring Pete back.
It's funny you say that because I said that on the radio one day and people were like, you're right. Do it.
No, Pete was great. I don't know what happened there. I don't, you know, I'm not inside the clubhouse or what went down or didn't go down, but I never saw that coming. Never saw it coming. And he had a better year last year than he did the year before. And I mean, my God, that's a guy that, like I say, forget the stats he put up. He showed up every day and he stepped in responsibility every day.
That's right.
And that's the guy I want on my team.
That's right. Me too.
Yes.
Your thoughts on this? Twice this past week, there were two pitchers on two different teams, both pitching perfect games. One was in the sixth, one was in the seventh, and then the managers took them out. Perfect game, still intact. The Marlin pitcher, he was at 92 pitches, I believe, in the seventh, and then the Pirate was at 77 pitches. So as someone who's been close to perfection, how would you handle the manager coming out to the mound with the hook?
Prime example, in 96 – I had missed a year and a half, and we're playing against Seattle, who at that time had the best hitting offense in baseball. Mm-hmm. We're beating them 2-0 in the ninth. I got a no-hitter going. I walked two guys in the ninth. Miguel Sotomayor comes out to the mound. He goes, Doc, how you doing? I said, don't matter. I'm not coming out. Yeah. So that's my question. That's my answer to that. But the thing is, now that's the way the game is with this pitch count, all this analytics stuff. But to be the devil's advocate against all that, you still got more injuries now than you had before. Mm-hmm. So is it either everything's about velocity and spin rate, not enough about mechanics? I mean, analytics, I understand it. I'm a fan for some of it, not all of it. But you got to get back into teaching these guys about mechanics. And they're in spring training, they only taught to go 100 pitches or less or not face the lineup three times around. So I don't blame the pitchers. I blame the system, the way the system is today. And being an old school guy, I don't want to be one of those guys that, oh, back in my day. But, I mean, come on. 75 pitches, I got a no-hitter going. It'd be a tough time getting me out of that game. Seriously.
Me too. I'd pull like a Gerrit Cole most. He was the other last week. He was like, I'm not coming out. Like, I love that.
Yeah. Those are the guys I want on my team. When a guy goes 5 minutes, 4 1/3, and he's coming out and he's waving his hat and he's smiling, I don't want you on my team. I'm sorry. Even though the system says that's enough, I don't want that guy.
Yeah.
I want a guy that I got to wrestle to get the ball from. You know, I need those guys as hard-nosed baseball players. Let's bring those guys back. Yeah. And nothing. Yeah. I mean, I still love the game. I respect these guys. Sure. I respect their ability, but some of this stuff is just too much. A little too much.
I agree. All right. Steve Cohen made a commitment to honoring the history of the Mets when he took over. And I'm hoping, you know, let's circle back to August 1st now. I'm hoping he's going to unveil like a permanent reminder of your 86 team finally at Citi Field. If it's something permanent, Doc, if that's what he's got up his sleeve, what would you like to see in a permanent memorial to your 86 team?
Oh, wow. That's a great question. Wow. I would just like to see a banner or something up there that says heart, soul, and dedication on that banner and have 86 in it, because that's what it's all about. And that's what we had. We probably had the best roster. And I think our 88 roster was better than 86, but we had heart, we had dedication, and you know, nobody was going to beat us. And that's what it took. It was all as one. So some kind of way to get that message across to anybody putting that uniform on. I will put that banner at Citi Field and also in Port St. Lucie at the spring training complex as a reminder, and put it in the clubhouse. Not saying these guys are not playing hard and going out there, but just that reminder. To understand, when you put that Met uniform on, you're out there for a purpose, and you're out there to do your best every single day, not just one day or whatever. I'm not feeling well. Every day you put that uniform on, it's a privilege.
That's almost like you. I'm thinking of, and yet you were a Yankee, you know, thank the good Lord for making me a Yankee as you're leaving the clubhouse. That would be awesome.
Yes. That would be awesome. Something like that would be awesome. Yes. And even though I thank the Steinbrenner family and the Yankees organization for giving me the opportunity to play there, but I'm always a Met. And some of that stuff I envy still, even though I play with the Yankees, but some of the sayings they have. And I remember spring training in 96 for the Yankees. They had like Yogi Berra, they had DiMaggio, they had Reggie Jackson, Ron Guidry, all these guys in spring training. I envy that stuff. I mean, I think some of these guys, it don't have to be me, but some of these guys from 86 should be there in the spring training. Whether the structures are just for these guys to pick their brain, it'd be great for the fans, it'd be great for everybody if they can get back to that, because you got to have tradition, you got to have that history back there, and for these young guys to feed off of that, I think it plays a big part.
It should, by the way, it should be you, by the way.
Yeah, there you go.
I always envisioned, instead of a banner, I always envisioned some sort of statue, like the celebration on the mound sort of statue. I don't know.
I guess, yeah. Something, but you're right, there should be something I want to be reminded. And it's funny because I listen to Jimmy Rollins and I forgot the guy's name. Ryan Howard.
Yeah.
Ryan Howard and Jimmy Rollins, they have this podcast, 611. I was watching their podcast because I like both of those guys, right?
Yeah.
And they were saying that when they played the Mets and the Braves, they said, when we played the Braves, it was like a respectful thing. We want to beat you, but we respect you. But when we play in New York, we want to beat those guys because they got New York on their chest. And that's what you got to get back to. And what I mean by playing in New York is a little different. Those guys want to beat you. They want to see you down. They want to take the benefit of the situation. They're not going to feel sorry for you. So some kind of way, we got to get that message across to these guys. When you put that New York on, it's more than just a baseball team or a baseball game. You're not in Minnesota or Pittsburgh. Not to knock those guys, but you're in New York. And so by wearing that New York jersey, that brings some extra pride, extra tradition, because these guys want to beat you because you're playing in New York. And these guys have to understand that in some kind of way, you get that message across. So what you're saying about the stature, I mean, that's sending that message and let these guys know the visiting teams coming here, a reminder, and the guys who are wearing the Met uniform, let them know what they're playing for. It's bigger than just, I'm in the big leagues, you know, making tons of money. No, it's more than that.
Yeah.
It's more than that.
Doc, when you're at Citi Field, I know you're there a lot.
Yes.
You look up, you see your number 16 hanging in the rafters, never to be worn again.
Wow.
What are you thinking about it as you're looking at it?
Oh, man, I'm getting chills now. You know, so you hear it might happen, but you don't know. Because, like, when you play Little League baseball or in the backyard playing, you never think about having your number retired. You think about playing Major League Baseball. You think about maybe winning the World Series. You never think about that. And to have that happen, have my kids in the stands, have my grandkids who never saw me play there, the fans who always wanted to make it right with, I didn't want to leave the Mets the way I did in 94. To have them there, my friends and family all coming in. Man, I'm getting choked up now just thinking about that. And just to have that, I always say to fans, and I can say it now, that the fans who was with me in 84 when I first came into the game, who was with me then, when you go to the ballpark, you go to Citi Field with your grandkid or your son or your neighbors, and you see 16 up in the rafters, tell them that you played a part of that. I want each fan to say I played a part of that, because without the fans' support, the energy they brought to me, the excitement, and my the support they gave me off the field, that don't happen. And I do remain, I truly remain that from the bottom of my heart, because I mean, that's a great honor. When I go to the field, I still take up people up there, and I'm very, like Snoop Dogg says, it's okay to give yourself a pat on the back. And so that's one time I can say I give myself a pat on the back for that. But it could not have happened without all the support that I had.
The great philosopher, Snoop Dogg.
Oh, man. Snoop was great, yeah.
All right. Well, Doc, I don't want to take any more of your time. You're always fantastic. You're welcome back anytime. And thank you
very much. Thank you. This is great. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
All right. Hope to see you on August 1st.
Yes, sir. Looking forward to it. Thank you. I'll talk to you soon.
Hey, y'all, I'm Maddie.
And I'm Poodle.
And together, we host the podcast Reality Gaze.
We are two ridiculous homosexuals who love nothing more than talking about reality television
and tearing in a new one. So whether it's 90 Day Fiancé, Love is Blind, Love After Lockup, or any other trash TV show about lonely hearts looking for love, your gay besties got you covered, y'all.
New shows every week. Follow and listen to Reality Gaze wherever you get your podcast. Reality
Gaze, let's love.